Hello, my dear friend. Welcome back to another episode of the Curious Neuron Podcast. My name is Cindy Hovington and I am your host. If you're new here to Curious Neuron, welcome. I am a mom of three with a PhD in neuroscience, and I am here to share research around our emotional health and emotional well-being, as well as our child's emotional development. I believe that we are not putting enough focus on emotions in this world, and that we need to talk about this a lot more. Not just saying that emotions exist, but saying that we need to find ways to cope with them, healthy ways to cope with them, because most of us that are now parents never learned how to cope with emotions when we were young. And that's what I want to help you with. Today's episode is a solo, and I actually had another topic planned for this episode, but something happened this week that I feel that I want to share and that I want to talk about. It's going to be almost like a journal or some sort of reflection with you being here. And I have to get this off my chest and to speak about this with all of you. So I'm going to talk about my grandmother who went into the hospital earlier this week. And I'll get into all the details right after I thank our sponsors. And you want to stay tuned for this. We're going to talk about trauma-informed care, and this applies regardless of your age and especially for our kids. There were so many things that I was seeing in the hospital that were kind of reminding me that we still need to learn a lot in our system. And although she's in the geriatric ward, I just kept making the links to young kids. So I'm going to talk to you about that in a second. First, I'd like to thank you, the audience, for following my podcast, subscribing. And if you're not subscribed and you're listening to it, please take a moment to click that subscribe button. It means the world to me, and it shows the algorithm for whichever platform you're listening through that it matters to you. So whether you are on Spotify or Apple or Audible or YouTube, click the subscribe button, and that lets them know that you care. And in addition, if you can take a moment to rate the podcast and review it wherever you are listening to it, and send me an email at info@curiousneuron.com. You know that this matters. This makes it means the world to me when you take a moment to reach out and to say hello and to also say that, hey, I rated your podcast. Because again, that helps me get the funding that I need to continue this podcast. And I absolutely love every aspect of this podcast, and you can't believe the guests I have coming up in 2024. So I'm excited for that as well. If you aren't following us on Instagram, you can do so at curious_neuron, and you can visit our website at curiousneuron.com. We have articles written by researchers and by graduate students, and we have Curious Neuron Academy. So if you're looking for a little bit more help this year, you can click on the Academy and get yourself a little webinar or a PDF toolkit, whatever works best for you. And I would like to take a moment to thank the Tannenbaum Open Science Institute here at the Neuro in Montreal for supporting the Curious Neuron podcast, as well as the McConnell Family Foundation for supporting the podcast. We have a new sponsor, and I'm so grateful for the help of these organizations that understand and believe in the importance of sharing science, because that is what I do. In addition to that, you will see in the show notes that I've been sponsoring or collaborating with some companies, and companies that I know will bring you something of high quality and something that will make a difference for your well-being, one of them being PocBock. And you might say, Cindy, how is a game supposed to support me as a parent? Well, because you don't have to worry about screen time with PocBock. It's such an open-ended, slow-paced, child-led game. And that was the first app that I installed on my phone for my kids. And I've been collaborating with them ever since because of how much I love this app. And they've been winning award after award this year. So you can get 50% off a full year subscription with the link below. And BetterHelp is one of our newer collaborators. And again, I'm just so grateful for the parents that reach out to me to say, you know what? I took a leap. I heard you talk about BetterHelp. I know you always talk about helping ourselves first. And now I did it, and I see a difference in my child. I haven't even done therapy for my child. It's for myself, and I see a difference in my child's behavior. So congratulations to all of you who are taking that time to do the work on yourself. And if you haven't yet, maybe you're not there yet, and it's okay. I would never want to pressure anybody to start the work if they're not ready yet. But keep it in mind that there are options for you. You don't have to leave your house with BetterHelp. You can do it from the comfort of your own home. And I also have a new collaborator. called Holsti, and they have these amazing toolkits that I've been playing around with and testing out. So for example, this toolkit in collaboration with the Greater Good Science Center, these are science-based practices for a meaningful life. And they come with these really cool cards. And what they do is they're divided into, like it says, 5 minutes casual. This is a self-compassion break. And you know that that's important for us to work on. So it tells you why you need to work on it and what you can do. For example, this one says, think of a situation in your life that is difficult and causing you stress. I love the reflection piece because you know that I've been journaling now for a year, and taking the time to sit back and to think about certain things really helps us in terms of, you know, where can we put our attention? What do we have control over? What don't we have control over? And here it talks about, so that's step one. Then it says, call the situation to mind and see if you can actually feel the stress and emotional discomfort in your body. Then number three says, now say to yourself, this is a moment of suffering. This acknowledgement is a form of mindfulness, of simply noticing that what is going on for you emotionally in the present moment without judging the experience as good or bad. You can also say to yourself, this hurts, or this is stress. Use whatever statements that feels best to you and natural to you. I'm not going to go on with this card, but just do this activity this week. Take a moment to sit down and write about that. Really reflecting on what's going on in our lives helps us so much. If you want more of these cards, they have these bigger packs. They have smaller packs as well. You can click the link in my show notes, holsti.com, and you can get 20% off any product that you buy. They even have a journal. They have so many different kinds of reflection cards for both you and your child. And the reason why I've partnered with them is because I want to make sure that I can bring anything, any product or service to you that will help you with your emotional or psychological well-being. So thank you to Holsti for giving us that discount for the Curious Neuron community. And as always, you know that I'm the co-founder of the WonderGrade app. So if you are looking for support specifically in helping you teach your child how to cope with emotions, you could click the link in my show notes that will bring you to the WonderGrade app in Canada, the States, or anywhere you are. And you can get 50% off a 1-year subscription. I know you've never heard me say that before. We are figuring our way around and how to build this app and make it successful for you so that it supports you. We just launched a parent section on the app so that you can find a place where you can find scripts, or we call them parenting audio guides. So if you're in a moment where you need to step away and go hide in the bathroom, do it. Don't feel guilty about it. Open the WonderGrade app and you can listen to audios that will help you if you're feeling guilty, if you yelled at your child and you want to calm yourself, if you're feeling rage or triggered. All of these audios are very specific for parents, and you can use that to help you so that you can co-regulate with your child and then offer them the skills they need to cope with emotions. All right, that's all I needed to share. Let's get to the more serious part of this podcast. Well, serious. I'm going to share, obviously, the story of what happened this week. So at the beginning of the week, my mother received a phone call, and my grandmother had left her house to go for a walk. She lives on her own. She lived on her own and had gone for a walk and got lost and ran into or walked into whatever, went into a store and told them that she didn't know where she was and couldn't even remember her name actually at that moment. So they called the police. Luckily, she was, you know, I live in Montreal and it's cold here. We're hitting like, you know, -5 degrees Celsius. She was out in the rain, no coat, no winter jacket, just her little sweater that she wears indoors, and had no wallet, no identification, nothing with her, just her house key. And I think this could have been much worse. I'm grateful that somebody found her, or that she decided to go into a store and to ask for help. She was far away from her home. And the police managed to find her home because they were driving around and she had to find something that looked familiar. All this to say, she ended up having to be hospitalized because it's the police's responsibility to stay with her until she's hospitalized so that she gets the care she needs. And things got worse for a little while. So keep in mind, this is a 91-year-old woman who's been living alone for years now. My grandfather passed away 9 years ago, and has dementia. And now you're in a new situation. So on the first night that she was in the geriatric ward, which the geriatric ward was not the way I pictured it. There are lots of people with dementia within this ward. And it it's chaotic at best, because the nurses right now and the support staff at the hospitals here in Montreal are all on strike. So that meant that there are fewer people or available to support and help the patients. And so in addition to that, she was in a room with four other people. And what struck me is after the first night, or that first night, apparently, the nurses told us that she tried to leave. They woke her up because in the middle of the night, they kept coming to take her blood pressure and make sure she was okay. This is her first night there. And she has a hearing aid, but she removes it at night. So she doesn't hear anything at all. So she woke up to somebody grabbing her arm to take her blood pressure and started hitting them and pushing them and got out of her bed somehow, even if she had tubes and whatever it was. And ran away, tried to run out. She didn't know where to go and just tried to leave. Now, yes, she was aggressive and I don't want to take that part away. But here's the point where I kind of keep linking to children. So she was held down. I don't know how. I wasn't there. But when my mom arrived the next morning, she was sitting on a chair in the middle of the hallway. So not in her bed, in the room, in the middle of the hallway. You know, at 7 o'clock in the morning, tied down to the chair in several areas of her body, arms, legs. She was completely tied to a chair. She couldn't get up. She was yelling, but had also received some medication and was sedated, but was still very clearly upset. I keep thinking of children that we label as being bad or misbehaving or aggressive. My grandmother experienced trauma that we are not all 100% aware of. We know she experienced trauma. She has referred to it. But that day after I went to see my grandmother, she kept talking about the two men that attacked her. I kept trying to calm her down. She was clearly distraught by everything that happened. And I wish I would have seen how they would have handled it. Again, she's extremely frail. She's 91 years old. She's never been aggressive to us or violent. She's never done anything. She nurtured me throughout my childhood. So knowing that that had happened to her was really painful. And I keep contrasting kids because she was perceived or labeled as an aggressive threat, violent person. When in the end, it was her response to past trauma and something triggered her and sent her in a different world. And especially with the dementia, I wish that we had a more trauma-informed system. You know, we had spoken to Dr. Bruce Perry, and he talks about like how the brain is different, right? When somebody experiences trauma or some sort of adversity. And it's the same thing with our kids. And I am not saying that every child has experienced some sort of trauma, but the ones that are struggling in school, the ones that are struggling to with very intense behavioral problems, why aren't we questioning what's going on when we don't see them, right? Why aren't we questioning if they, like their attachment or their if they've been abused or neglected? And I know that that's hard as a parent to hear that because like, well, are you saying I've done something to my child? Sometimes we do things without realizing. I've spoken about spanking, right? Maybe we don't have any other tools in our toolbox to discipline our child. And discipline to me means education, not some sort of form of punishment. But, you know, what do we have? Whatever we have in our toolbox is what we're going to use as a parent. We never intentionally want to hurt our child, hopefully. But when we do it through spanking, that's a form of trauma. That is an adversity. And so a child, and I've spoken about this research before, a child who's spanked, before, not just once, I'm not talking about that one time, but a child who's often spanked before the age of 5, they've noticed that by the age of 7, there are more behavioral problems, more aggressive situations in that child or aggressive behavior. When are we as a system, and I know I'm a little bit everywhere today because it's hard to talk about all this, but when are we as a system going to start asking why? Or like Dr. Bruce Perry says, what happened to you? There is no aspect of this healthcare system, from what I saw, that tried to calm her down and remind her she is safe, right? You ran, you pushed somebody, you are a danger. And we say the same thing with our kids. You are mean. You are aggressive. You are a bad kid. And I'm not saying we all do that, but I've heard this ad nauseum from parents around me. So I know that it's happening. When do we start saying, how can I help you? When do we start saying, do you feel safe? And they might not even realize if they do, especially if they're a child or even an elderly, right? With my grandmother, she's not going to make the link between her being grabbed in the middle of the night and her past trauma. It's clear that it's there, but she won't make the link. It is up to us as professionals, whether we work with kids or with elderly or anybody, to say, me grabbing somebody's arm in the middle of the night might trigger a trauma response. But we're not doing that. We're not doing that with kids, and we're not doing that with adults. And I know she's not the only one, because she changed room. And just yesterday, when I was at the hospital with her, I heard the other lady in her room talking about past trauma. You know, what was this? I think I mentioned the stats on this podcast a few episodes ago, but 60% of us, over 60% of us, experience some form of trauma or adversity, early childhood adversity, before the age of 15. So that's a very high percentage of us that have experienced something, meaning that in a moment we feel triggered. We might not see the link, but our brain does. Our brain remembers. Our brain developed those patterns that if we are being grabbed by the arm, or if somebody is yelling at us, it doesn't matter if it's our kid or an adult, that yelling brings us back to that adversity or trauma, or that scent brings us back to adversity or trauma. Our brain knows. So at what point, as a system, how long can we keep ignoring this without actually bringing the research that is there, that is clear, into the picture, so that we can take better care of our kids and better care as a system of patients, right? And this trauma-informed system applies in preschools and daycares and schools, in high schools and elementary schools, in our system, our healthcare system, everywhere. There is so much adversity and so much trauma out there, big trauma, little trauma, you know, different types of trauma. Something that is traumatizing to me might not be traumatizing to you. But when do we as a system start using this science to inform what we are doing with society? Especially, and I said at the beginning, this comes back to our kids, and it's important to us, because if we are just on autopilot and continuing things the way that they are, and we have all these kids in daycare, and we think of that percentage, over 60% of kids will experience some form of maltreatment, trauma, abuse, neglect before the age of 15. And by the way, of these 60%, 77% of these will experience it from their own parents. Again, I know that we are not doing it on purpose sometimes, and we are just doing the best that we can with the tools that we have. But when will we start taking those stats a little bit more seriously as a society? A 91-year-old woman, you should have seen. You should see. I have pictures of them, and every ounce of me wants to put this up on social media to talk about it, because a 91-year-old woman shouldn't have black and blue wrists and arms. And this is not where they took blood. I know that that causes bruises. And I'm not pointing at the people who did it. I'm pointing at the flaws in our system that should have educated these people in treating her a little bit differently. How does it make sense that a 91-year-old woman who's so frail, they can barely draw blood from her because there's nothing, like it's just bones. How does it make sense that her wrists are black and blue because of how tightly somebody must have grabbed her and how tightly they must have tied her down? Because she got scared. And how many kids are scared of adults around them and act out and behave? And I say this over and over again, a child misbehaving is some form of communication. It applies to us too. If I'm misbehaving, right? If we stop using that word and we turn it to actually describing the behavior, if I'm yelling more often with my partner or with my kids, that if we say misbehaving, we let it go. It's over. She's misbehaving. She's a bad mom. But if I say it as it is, I'm yelling more. And we add that word because, remember, I brought this up a really long time ago. Cindy is yelling more because she is stressed. Cindy is yelling more because she's really overwhelmed by what's going on in her life right now. Cindy is yelling a lot more because she's sad. If we describe the behavior and give it substance, then we understand that that behavior has some underlying cause or reason. We can do that with our kids. My child is aggressive because, and if we can't fill out that because, we need to get curious. Why? What's going on? Is there a change in caregivers in their environment? Did they change daycare? Did the caregiver at their daycare change? Not necessarily saying that something bad is happening, but that transition could lead to their system being in fear. And when our system is in fear, even if we don't consciously know it, especially with a young child, especially with an adult who has dementia, our system is in fear. We are going to react to it, not respond, react to it. And we react to it externally through our behavior. So internally, we are experiencing fear, but externally, I'm yelling at you. A child is yelling, is aggressive, is trying to get away from you, doesn't want to be held by you, doesn't want to be calmed down by you. We are seeing the external aspect. And as a society, we're labeling this as misbehavior. But we are not saying, we're just saying misbehavior. And that's this blanket of statement. That's like this big term that really we're not being specific. So if we can say that child is hitting more because whatever the reason is, then we start saying, oh, well, I can do something in that child's environment to change that because, right? So if the because is they haven't built an attachment with their new caregiver, great. Let's find ways to work on that. Let's be more vocal with their caregiver to say, look, you're new. Let's find ways to connect. Can I have a picture of you? Can I put it in my house? Can I talk about you? Can I make my child feel safer in your environment? Or if your child is yelling at you a lot more because you've been stressed lately and you notice that you are very different around your child, what can you do to start working on your stress? Can you journal? Can you work on mindfulness? And I know all these things feel like very big undertakings, but they're small steps. I started journaling in January, so almost a year ago now. And that has made a huge difference for me in how I'm responding to my kids and how I'm dealing with overwhelm. I have my journal beside me. And to me, this week, I've been journaling a lot because every day has brought on some sort of emotion. And I don't want that emotion to trickle into my parenting. Not saying that it hasn't at all, but a lot less than it would have a year ago if I wasn't journaling about everything, because I get it out there. I have a support system. I talk to my husband. I call my friend, you know, my friends, and I talk to them about what's happening. I get it out of my system. What do we have as support? And some, not all of us have support. Not all of us have a partner that we can talk with or a friend that we can call. So that journaling piece, or even just taking your phone and talking to it, anything for you to get it out of your system and to start reflecting, which is why I love the Holstie cards, right? They're supporting how you can reflect about something. Okay, so clearly there's a lot on my mind this week, and clearly it's just been a really overwhelming week to the point that I just couldn't record when I wanted to record for this week's podcast. And I know that it's a lot, but I do want us to use this podcast episode, and I don't want to talk for 3 hours, but I do want us to take this experience that I have had this week to help us reflect on which changes we can make. If you are a grandparent, if you are a parent, if you are somebody that works in a daycare or preschool or school setting, what can you become more aware of with that child in front of you to start asking why? Stop. Let's try as a society or as a Curious Neuron community to stop saying my child is misbehaving. Let's be very specific. My child is aggressive, and let's use that word because. My child's been more aggressive lately because. You don't have to have the answer to it. And most of us might not get the answer to it right away. Some of us might. We might say, well, we just changed home, or I'm going through a divorce or a separation, and that's very heavy on my child. Those are very normal situations for a child to change their behavior because they're testing their environment, or they're scared, or things are not certain, and you know, that's causing a lot of the stress in their system. But it doesn't mean you have to ignore it, right? It doesn't mean that we have to say like, well, they're misbehaving or they're acting out and yelling a lot more because I'm going through a separation. No, that still means that we have to try to offer tools. But can we, as a takeaway from today's episode, reflect on how we can support children a lot more in our society? If you work with children and you've noticed in your daycare or your preschool that there's a child who's just misbehaving a lot, what is that misbehavior? Are they yelling at you? Are they being very rough and aggressive with other children? How can you have a conversation with their parent about what we just said today? How can you start that conversation in a way? And you know that with Curious Neuron, compassion is very important. I don't want to point fingers at parents. I don't want to point fingers at you. I don't want you to point the fingers at the parents, but I want you to get curious with them and to say, I've noticed that your child is doing XYZ and that I can't come up with the reason why. I want to get curious about the reason why. And I need you to help me, because if we don't work on this together, it's going to continue and your child's going to be, you know, they're going to get disciplined and in trouble for things that might not necessarily be their fault. Talk to the parent about how the brain functions and how perhaps at home, if there are differences or if there's a caregiver, maybe one parent is very gentle and shows a lot of warmth and has those limits and boundaries versus another parent that might not show a lot of warmth and connection. Maybe the child's responding to that. Maybe, you know, the parents are arguing a lot in the home and the child is responding to that. Maybe you're listening to this and saying, I have been arguing a lot with my partner. Things aren't going well. And I have noticed a very big difference in my child. All I want from this episode is for us as people either working with kids or having kids to reflect on the reasons why. Jot some notes. Is it possibly because of ABC? I don't know. You will figure this out. But let's not continue going on autopilot without taking the time to reflect on what might be happening with our kids or anybody, even ourselves. If you've been feeling a certain way and acting the behavior, right? We've talked about cognitive behavioral therapy, where there's a link between our behavior, our emotions, and our thinking, right? Our thoughts. Let's not continue as a society. Let's start this next year being more mindful of all of this so that we can support ourselves, we can support our partners, we can support our children, we can support our family members, whatever it is. I hope that we can start as a society making some changes. And I know this episode is not going to make the big difference, but at least to us here, this Curious Neuron community, this amazing community of people that reach out to me, all of you, the emails I receive every week now, I used to get like one every 2-3 weeks, and now it's like a couple every week. And that's good enough for me. That means that you care enough to email me. So thank you. You can email me at info@curiousneuron.com. You know, if this resonated with you, if you have a question, if you want to say hi, if you want to tell me who you are, just say hi, just send me an email. I know this wasn't as organized as the other ones, and there aren't any like 3 take homes, but the one take home I do want is that we start reflecting on our system. I'm sorry. This was a bit of a mess. I had to get this off my chest. Next week, we will have a more organized episode, and I hope you had a wonderful week. I don't want to pretend that I did. It was a really, really emotionally challenging week. I know things will get better. She will be going into a retirement home, and we're looking for one for her right now. But what happened to her, I just wish it wouldn't happen to her or anybody else, regardless of your age. And that's all I had to share this week. Oh, and by the way, I need to say one thing about Quebec. I live in Quebec, this province in Canada, and I cannot tell you how many times I heard nurses say to patients who are, again, in the geriatric ward, have dementia, are confused, are scared, tell them that they had to speak to them in French. So if you're not from Quebec, then you might not understand why I just said that. We, as a province, have lots of flaws. I love living here. Sometimes I don't. But we have these new laws that came into effect. We have language police. The French language is very protected, and I speak French. Je parle français. Je pense que c'est une langue très importante. I don't want it to disappear. And that's never something, you know, I enjoy speaking many languages. I also speak in Italian. I speak French, English, and Italian. But the English speaking people here are often pushed to the side. And I cannot believe that I had to hear multiple times in the hospital this week, a nurse in a hospital tell a patient who was speaking in English, asking a question, or one lady was asking for her clothing. She said, "Where are my clothes?" To be told, "Madame, je ne parle pas en anglais. Parlez-moi en français." So that means, "Miss, I don't speak in English. You need to speak to me in French." And on the whiteboard on that floor was a sign that said, "On this floor, we speak in French. Sur cet étage, on parle en français." In a hospital with elderly, with dementia, the last thing somebody needs to think of is switching. And also, one woman was really nice because she switched from English to French to try to communicate with the nurse. But another woman was getting frustrated because she kept asking a question and the nurse kept saying, "Speak to me in French. Speak to me in French. Speak to me in French." So obviously that kind of back and forth led to that patient feeling very upset, which led to the nurse saying, "I'm not going to speak to you if you're treating me like this." But she was put in that situation. She got frustrated. That is an episode for another time. And I definitely will be jumping onto social media as soon as I'm calm enough to talk about it. That is not healthcare. So bravo, Quebec, for creating this kind of healthcare for our patients. So in addition to not being trauma-informed, you put language first over the patient. And that's all I have to say today. I know it's probably the first time you've heard me speak like this. I haven't sworn, but I am appalled by so many things in our healthcare system. And that is all. I hope you have a beautiful and lovely week. I will see you next week. Thanks for being part of this community.